Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Brash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
Our broadcast this evening is brought to you by tonight's show sponsor. Of course, it's Nature Box, shipping tasty, guilt-free snacks and shipping them right to your front door with tons of options, over 100 flavors to choose from, delicious stuff like coffee kettle popcorn, the salt and pepper pistachios, and the whole wheat strawberry figgy bars. So check them out. In fact, you can start a free trial at naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. Browsing an article in my hometown newspaper, the Tulsa World, in light of the Oklahoma Freethought Convention, which is coming up in just a few days. I'm one of the speakers, and so I was asked to participate along with some of the other speakers. Vicki Garrison and Jason Heap made the article as well, asked to participate in an interview for an article in the hometown paper. Now, anybody who knows anything about Jesus Town here knows how dicey this proposition can be. Wait, a Tulsa newspaper wants to do an article about an atheist or free thought or secular event in this town? Get ready, right? Because they're going to be circling us with torches. But I did an interview, about a 20-minute phoner, with Hannah Covington of The World, and she did a very fair article titled Oklahoma Freethought Forum Provides Community for Atheists, Secularists. Vicki Garrison was also involved. Jason Heap, who is, I think, soon to be, hopefully, the first ever humanist chaplain in the U.S. Armed Forces. He's got a very interesting story to tell, and many others are going to be at the event. But they featured us three in the article. And the article was extremely fairly written, emphasizing community and education and the support of rational, reasonable ideas, that kind of thing. It was really well done. But the article appeared actually a day early. It came out in print form on Saturday. It came out online on Friday, the day before. And immediately, the comment section went something like this. I wonder how it is that these humanists will somehow inspire one another. And another chimes in, not so much inspire each other as validate each other's unbelief and self-worship. Another comment said, misery loves company. Hopefully, lightning won't hit the building. About half the people there will probably be trying to pick up somebody. And there's a joke underneath that about the drunken orgy. Typical comment about, hey, if you don't believe in something, why would you ever want to get together and talk about it? The faith of an atheist is extreme. Another comment that said, this is a worship service. Everyone worships something. But a personal favorite was by a woman who had multiple posts on the thread, and she said, what is this immoral communist peddling? Communist? What? She may have betrayed her generation, because if she's talking about communism as an evil thing, she's probably a byproduct of the Red Scare of the 1950s and early 1960s. In fact, that was one of the reasons that our Congress voted to put under God and some religious language in our Pledge of Allegiance and other types of things, because we were standing up against those evil satanic communists, you know. And then she says, are they opening an atheist church in Tulsa? But my favorite was this statement, quote, he should be blackballed from Tulsa. Now, there are several men listed in the article, so I don't know if she's speaking about me or Jason Heap or William Poix. I don't know. But one of us according to her, should be run out of town. You know, just get the posse together, people. Let's just run his ass out of town. Please remove him. He has a differing idea than I do. Right? It's not I disagree. It's you should leave. Anyway, I'll be curious to see if this article generates any protest picket signs, something of that nature for the event on Saturday. By the way, if you are in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area, it's freeok.org to find out more. I think the tickets run like $15 for the whole day. Next Tuesday's podcast is actually a recording that we did just a few days ago. I'm in California doing some tour stops kind of along the coast next week. So next week's podcast is sort of already in place. And it's going to be a conversation between myself and recording artist Shelley Siegel in the wake of her new album called Strange Feeling. And yes, Shelley brings a guitar to the broadcast, and it's awesome. Just 90 minutes as she talks about her life and her music and plays several songs from older and the new album for the radio audience. And I've done something special for those who support this broadcast on Patreon at patreon.com/Seth Andrews. You guys are going to get a link to the video of that exchange. We actually had Skype video from Shelley and a camera here in my studio, so you'll have an extra dimension to that particular broadcast. And thanks so much for supporting the show. Tonight's broadcast is all about PKs. It's about preacher's kids. Was it an amazing experience? Was it a horrible experience? Did you live the life of Riley, or are you psychologically scarred from the experience? Those types of things. In fact, we've got several people lined up on the switchboard and a call later in this broadcast from a father and son. Father's no longer a preacher, but he used to be, and he and his son sort of rendezvous here on the radio to talk about the experience, what it was like, and how they got out. That's going to be an interesting exchange coming up in just a little bit. If you get a second tonight, log on to our show sponsor's website, naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. They've been making a big noise about the recent addition of three new snacks to their long list of over 100 snacks already available for your online pantry. You can check out the mini Belgian waffles, the strawberry lemonade fruit stars, and the sweet and salty nut medley, just to name a few. And you can browse the snacks online. They've got beautiful pictures. You can find out what's in them, how it all works, and you can fill up your online pantry based on what kind of snacks you want. A fantastic alternative to the sugar and the fat and the preservatives and all the junk. You can snack smarter with Nature Box. Zero artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. 0 grams trans fats. No high fructose corn syrup, and a great way to support this broadcast. So log on. If you've never tried them, you can start a free trial tonight as well with 5 of their most popular snacks. Go to naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. We'll start with an email from David who said this. My family all works in Christian organizations, and my grandfather, who I live with, is a preacher. I haven't come out as an atheist, but he's a nice guy in his 80s who worries about me, so I don't think I'm going to. But God bless a preacher's ignorance about atheism. I have my Nietzsche displayed openly on my bookshelf between Philip K. Dick and Chuck Palahniuk, and they don't suspect a thing. Perhaps the most interesting part is my dad is more fundamental, as fundamental as it gets here in New Zealand, I guess, than my 80-year-old priest grandfather. And recently they had an argument about evolution. I'm really surprised that the guy born before World War II was the one saying evolution was a possibility. My dad is crazy, though. He believes our cat is possessed. What? David? Come on, he's just being funny. We've all said it about cats, anyway. Our cat's possessed. There's a special club in Hollywood, which is basically the Illuminati. Whenever evolution is mentioned, he'll bring up thermodynamics and kinds. I'm more afraid to come out to him than my grandparents. The scary thing is, throughout high school, I was like him. David, thanks for the email. Jeremiah said this. I'm not a preacher's kid, but I have several family members who are preachers, uncles and cousins, and I'm married to a PK. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, which is not known for being a particularly religious region of the country. But I lived in a small enough city, far enough from the godless coastal metropolitan areas, that a person's Christianity was pretty much just taken for granted. In fact, I grew up in a relatively strict branch of the Church of Christ, one where we proudly condemned people to an eternity in hell for the major sins of worshiping with musical instruments or not taking communion every Sunday, or, God forbid, taking communion on a day other than Sunday. Interestingly, though, for such a strict conservative family, people have been incredibly unconcerned about my family since we left the church a couple of years ago. I'm truly convinced by this that the majority of people really don't believe in hell. If they did, they'd make much more of an attempt to save the souls of my wife, our two boys, and me, who they profess to care so deeply about. We still have many friends and family in the church, and only the preacher and my grandparents have ever tried to reconvert us. My wife grew up in a Midwest, Bible Belt, quiverful, hellfire and brimstone brand of Christianity. Her dad preached in churches in Louisiana, Missouri, Nebraska, Colorado, and Washington, plus a little time on the traveling camp and revival circuit. He is a powerful speaker, charismatic and persuasive, definitely the cult of personality type, and really not far from being a cult leader. He's also a man with many demons hidden away in the closet. That cultish personality type brings with it a willingness to manipulate and coerce in a never-ending drive for power, and that had lasting effects on my wife's life. Growing up, they were constantly on the move, never living in one place for more than a couple of years. He would move to town, either planting a home church or stepping in to preach at a floundering church, and the church would grow rapidly. Eventually, though, he would cause controversy in one way or another, often in an overreach for power. The church would crumble, and he'd be run out of town. The darker side of this type of personality, though, was what really affected his family. He had multiple affairs and spent years molesting his five daughters. He was verbally abusive, and I would argue physically abusive as well, although many in that world would say he was just an overzealous spanker, rather than just being physically abusive. They were raised to look at the world as an us-against-them situation, not just the church versus the unchurched, but their core family were the only people they could trust, and even their closest friends were viewed in a somewhat adversarial manner. None of the girls were ever the rebellious PKs that I grew up around. While most of my friends and family who were PKs were into drinking, pot, and sex, you know, the usual teen party scene, viewed as extreme rebellion in my world, by high school, none of these girls had even tried so much as a sip of alcohol, at least until well into their 20s, and some of them still haven't. Fortunately, nearly everyone in the family has completely broken ties with this man in the past few years. Only their mother is still by his side, and what I can only guess is a pretty classic case of Stockholm syndrome. My wife and one of her sisters, who just happens to be married to my brother, but that's a whole separate story, have left the church completely, although we're unable to be open about our atheism at the moment because of what that would do to their relationship with the rest of the sisters. We found it to be more productive to exist outside of the church world and answer questions about why we don't believe in creationism, flood myths, or why God couldn't be both immanent and good without the stigma of the word atheist, by allowing them to think that we could, in some way, maybe still be considered to have some sort of faith, we're able to have conversations that lead them to ask important questions on their own. One final thing I'd like to touch on. Your most recent podcast at the time I'm writing this was on blame. My wife's dad had an absolutely horrible childhood. He was passed from foster home to foster home, I believe 15 different foster homes, plus stints with family members by the time he was 18. He was abused physically, sexually, and emotionally. It's no wonder, looking at his past, that he put himself in situations where he felt powerful, where he could manipulate and control others. He was powerless and unloved his entire childhood and spent his adult life overcompensating for that. Even though I know why he is the way he is, and why he did the horrible things he did, I in no way think that absolves him from blame. Even if every action or decision he's ever made in his life truly was predetermined by his biology and his environment, those actions and decisions still make him a dangerous, and I would even say evil, person. Even if the ultimate choices we make are somehow predetermined, the other possible options still exist in the world, and we must be held accountable for who we are. My father-in-law is a dangerous man and should not be allowed around children or otherwise vulnerable people. I don't think it matters whether he chose to be that person or had that decision dictated for him. Thank you, Seth, for providing this forum. I look forward each week to Wednesday mornings when I get to listen to the previous night's podcast while on my run. I hope someday soon I'm able to be an out-and-proud atheist, and when that day comes, The Thinking Atheist will be one of the first resources I share with my friends, Jeremiah. And he includes a P.S. He says, I'm not worried about being outed on your podcast. If anyone I know's listening, it'll just give me something to talk to them about. Jeremiah, thank you very much for sharing your perspective. Area code 204, you're on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. Who's this?
This is Lee.
Lee, we're talking about PKs, preacher's kids. What do you have for us tonight?
I am one myself, one of probably almost 40 years.
Was it a strict upbringing? Was it sort of no big deal? What was your take on it?
Well, it's an evangelical background, so fairly strict, I would say. Growing up a teenager, there was no school dances, movies, that sort of thing for sure. Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday Bible study. So fairly strict upbringing.
You guys didn't even go to the movies? I mean, were you like bubble people? You know, were you just living in sort of an isolation chamber in a way? Or am I getting that wrong?
No, it's interesting. I was thinking about that. And we didn't go to movies at all. But it was interesting that if we were on vacation somewhere, we would go to a movie, and at the time, I just thought it was a treat, but I honestly think it was just because we, as a family, we knew no one in the congregation would see us in this theater.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Hey, we're not around where anybody can see us walk in the door. Let's go sneak off and see a film, which tells you probably something about what everybody's desire really was, right? They wanted to go out and taste some of the good stuff in life, and they had to go on vacation in order to do it.
Yeah, but the family was always certainly under a microscope. I mean, I think that was part of it.
Was it G movies only, or were you allowed the dreaded PG?
Long time ago, but it was sort of. I remember going to see Superman with the Christopher Reeve one years ago, and that was a treat that typically that wouldn't happen if we were in town. That's for sure.
Well. Was your experience a positive one? Was it oppressive? Was it awesome? I mean, what was your perception of those years?
Yeah, well, my parents weren't monsters, of course, but certainly church was first, God above all, that sort of thing. So if I lacked anything, it would certainly be social interaction with friends I had at school. You know, they'd be going out for the evening or whatever, driving around, going to a school dance, and we would be having none of that.
Because dancing is evil, that kind of thing?
Well, it leads to all sorts of horrible things, yes.
Yeah. Many of them done horizontally. That was what they told us. I think what they said us in youth group when I was, I guess I was 16 or so, it was dancing is a vertical expression of a horizontal desire. You know,
it's, exactly.
You know, dancing leads to sex. And of course, if you don't dance, you'll never have the desire to go and get in bed with somebody. Yeah. You had a television in the home. I've talked to many PKs. They didn't have TV. So you guys got to do that, right?
We did have fairly typical PK television viewing. You'd be able to watch Wide World of Disney Saturday night, that sort of thing, and Littlest Hobo, and, you know, the odd show, but no cartoons, of course, that had involved any superheroes whatsoever. So, you know, there was some viewing, and we didn't have a lot of channels anyway, right?
So where's the churning resentment I'm used to hearing from many people who emerge from these homes, you know, where they feel like Oh, Mom and Dad essentially put me in a box and nailed the top onto it and didn't allow me out. And then was 18. I was unprepared for the world and screw a whole bunch of that, right? They just leave pissed off because they sort of, and then they bounce the other direction, right? They have everything right. Sort of cut off. They have all the forbidden fruits over here. And once they get out of the house, they find themselves making up for lost time. How did that work out for you?
I think if I did that, it was at a later age. Because after I left the house at 18, 19, I was still very much involved in the church. So I think if I was going to go the opposite direction and rebel, I was also old enough to know, okay, some of that's just ridiculous and can be self-damaging. So, you know, I cope fairly well. And honestly, some of it, I just shake my head and laugh and laugh. And I can't grieve over time past. It is gone, right?
Was Bible study mandatory for you? You know, memory verses and...
Yes, oh, for sure. To go to summer camp, you had to memorize this many verses and to, yeah, 100%.
You did the Christian summer camp thing? Did you go and they had a service three times a day and those types of things?
Yep, 100%. Christian high school in my senior year as well. So there was morning chapel before classes and then, you know, standard classes as far as high school classes, but also some biblical classes during... to teach you biblical life skills, et cetera, right?
Did you take prayer requests and pray and salute the Christian flag and the Bible?
Not so much the saluting the flag Bible, but certainly the prayer requests and prayer. You have your list of prayer items and whatnot.
Did your school have church services like Wednesday chapel? Did they round everybody up at least once a week and have a preacher?
Our school?
Yeah.
It was just my senior year, but we had chapel every morning, yes, before school.
You had a service every day?
Quick half hour, pump you up. And as a grade 12, we actually had to take our turn at the pulpit, which was terrifying, but yes. So we did have a quick service every day before school.
Little morning injection of Jesus before the education starts. So how were you on stage? Were you terrified? Were you up there when you're like your hands are shaking, that kind of thing? Because, that can be pretty rough.
Yeah. I remember some of it being rough. I remember, you know, as the year goes on, you know your peers are out there and you're somewhat comedic and probably met with some disapproval of the elders. But, you take it in stride because everyone's doing it.
Walk me through, just in a nutshell, how you escaped. I mean, I realize you grew up and became an adult and started to do your own thing. But, you know, you didn't raise a house full of PKs yourself, right? You didn't jump into the ministry.
Correct.
You didn't toe the line. You're not walking around in khaki slacks and with a Bible under your belt, you know, kind of thing. How did you escape?
Well, I mean, I was talking about my wife, to my wife about this a little while ago, and it was funny. She said it kind of just slowly evolved, and it probably took, I'm going to say 5 years by the time we just stopped attending on a regular basis to finally saying, okay, we're done. And the deconverted book, I read that, there was so many similarities from the path I took to escape and to finally feel like, okay, I'm unshackled, really.
The book encouraged you.
Yes, I would say the door was open, the book flung it wide open for sure.
Very kind.
100%. I bought my sister and my brother a copy as well.
I did not pay him to say that. I haven't prompted him to say that, everybody. I just want you to know that. I'm amazed at how many people have sort of gone through this kind of thing. You know, it's the kind of culture where nobody says, what the hell? And you're not even really allowed to say, what the heck? Because you know what heck stands for.
It's
for H-E-double-L, and you just don't say that, you know, that kind of thing. You don't say darn because, well, you're not saying darn if you know what I mean, and I think you do. You know, those types of conversations are actually happening.
Yeah, those actually happen.
So, I mean, we would come up with all sorts of, you know, this, my sisters or I don't know who it was, son of a biscuit eater, you know, those kinds of things. How you doing today, Lee? You all right?
I'm fantastic. I'm doing very well. I saw that you were doing a podcast on Preacher's Kids and had to be part of it.
Well, Lee, thanks for being a part of the broadcast. Thanks for sharing your perspective. Glad you escaped, my friend, and you got sort of a great perspective to help encourage other people. So thanks for using it.
Thank you very much, Seth.
Gino sent a message and said, I'm the son of a non-denominational Church of Christ and Pentecostal, mainly, evangelist. I was raised with my father being a pastor of his own church, followed by periods of being associate pastor for others and times of nothing but doing tent revivals. In the course of my life, I've met over 500 pastors and evangelists. Only one of these people was even halfway honest. One of the tent revival preachers would spend his days in his hotel room under a sun lamp with a poster board cut out of a hand in it on his back. What? Under a sun lamp with a poster board cut out of a hand in it on his back. In the middle of his sermon, he would let out a yell and arch his back. He would then say that the hand of the Lord had just touched him and pull up his suit coat and shirt to show the crowd where. Points for creativity on that one, Gino. That's a new one. He says, I was taught to run the PA and soundboard as a child because it made for a cheap alternative to hiring somebody. I escaped the tent revivals at age 14 when I pointed out that the zap people were feeling when the preacher was laying on hands was actually the short in the mic cord. Theists try to discount my unbelief by saying my experiences are why I gave up Christianity. They're partially right. Those experiences fostered doubts, and those doubts led me to examine the things I've been taught to believe. Once I looked at those beliefs critically, they fell apart. Luckily, by that time, I was living with my mother and my stepfather and wasn't pressured to repent. It was hard to give up on religion, so I tried other religions and ended up pagan for a while. Well, pagan light. I viewed the gods and goddesses as metaphysical constructs of concepts. I eventually admitted to myself that I didn't really believe and openly claimed the titles of atheist and skeptic. Keep up the good work. Gino, thanks for sending in the email. Much appreciated. Area code 814, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hi, my name's Camille.
Camille, we're talking about PKs, preachers' kids. Are you one?
Yes, I am.
And you lived to tell the tale.
Yes, I did. Actually, I guess I should say I was one until Sunday because my dad resigned from his church on Sunday morning. So I as soon as I saw this, I was like, I need to call and talk to Seth and tell him my story a little bit.
I hope it was by choice. He wasn't like forced out after something untoward happened, was he?
No, he was not forced out. It was a voluntary decision on his part. My parents have had marriage problems for the past 8 years, and so it was slightly forced because of that.
Oh, I see.
My mom was pushing for his resignation for a long time, but it's only been recently that he actually, you know, said, I need to take my family and put them first instead of continuing to push past that and to minister.
Well, as a preacher's kid, what's your take on all of this? I mean, I don't really even have a question at the beginning of the conversation. I just want to know what you think. So what do you think?
It was a mixed bag, just like anything else. I think that for me, probably the best part of it was my dad is awesome. Just as a man, he's just a great guy. And being a preacher's kid, it gave me an inside edge into the church, into ministry life and what that was like. And obviously I knew the Bible better than anybody in the church. And so that kind of pushed me towards my atheism, as most people say tends to happen. So I'm grateful for it in that aspect. And I still have this wealth of biblical knowledge that I can draw from as a result of being the pastor's kid.
I have a conversation coming up with a former pastor and his son, and I'll present this to them, but I'd like your take as well. How much of the image of the pastoral family is real, and how much of it is manufactured for the benefit of the flock?
I think in our case, a lot of it was manufactured because my parents did have marriage problems. It was kind of, we had to keep up this image, and we were never allowed to talk about what was really going on at home. So I think that for our case, it was definitely a manufactured image.
That's tough, isn't it? You've got a squabble inside the walls of your house. There's a point of contention, disagreement, strife. People sometimes argue, fact of life, even people who love each other. And yet,
yeah,
you go to church on Sunday and you preach about overcoming strife,
yeah,
and division and arguments and loving each other. It's got to be tough.
It was very difficult. It felt very hypocritical, and I'm very thankful to not be in that environment anymore where I don't pretend like everything is okay. I can be honest with my emotions.
Camille, were they dressing you in like the floor-length denim skirts and preaching the modesty message every 5 minutes and doing what they often do to females? Young females in the church are often the target of these types of things. You know, they're, everything is true love waits, preserve the mystery was one way I'd heard it couched. Did you catch a lot of that?
I definitely did. It wasn't floor-length skirts. Thankfully, we weren't like a skirts-only church by any means. But I think especially the true love waits and the message of purity and not dating, that was probably what I experienced the most of as regards to issues that assault young women in the church. I was taught that dating was a sin, that you were supposed to court, which basically means that your parents are supposed to be involved every step of the way as far as any relationship that you enter into. And I pretty much bought into that message, I'm sad to say. I thought that if my dad did not approve of a young man, that I should basically cut off all ties with him, which is something that happened to me twice while I was a Christian, while I was living under my parents' roof. And it's extraordinarily oppressive. I lost two of my best friends because of male friends, you know, who were pursuing a relationship with me because of that. And it's very sad to see the destruction that's still continuing to happen because of people like Josh Harris, who are pushing this mentality of, I kiss dating goodbye, and, you know, only, there's this other guy, Vody Bachum, who has this family-integrated church philosophy that he likes to put forward. And that is even probably more oppressive than the I kiss dating goodbye sort of mentality.
I remember they had true love waits campaigns in our high school, and the idea was you're waiting for marriage to have sexual relationships, right? You are preserving, because it's not just a physical bond. It is a spiritual bond. It is a God-sanctified thing. So they would bring these young people together, and they would promote celibacy before marriage, and then they would have them say a pledge, and they would pledge themselves. And many would wear jewelry, ring, like a true love waits ring or promise rings, you know, to say, I promise, if they met someone, I promise to preserve myself for you until the day we marry. And you look back at all these weird sort of hoops they had young people jump through, and it's a recipe for disaster. Because
it is.
You're in many ways setting them up for failure, or at the very least, a dysfunctional attitude toward healthy relationships.
It very much is. And you mentioned the purity rings. I wore a purity ring from my a family member from 16 till, gosh, I don't even remember exactly when I took it off or why. I think I ended up taking it off because it didn't fit anymore. It had nothing to do with my purity or my stance on that because I was still a Christian at the time. I was never brought in for a campaign or a pledge, but I know there were lots of purity balls, you know, fathers and daughters getting together and going on this kind of formal date together and having this sort of ceremony, almost akin to a marriage ceremony I've heard of in some circles, where they're making this sort of commitment and pledge for something that they really have very little knowledge or experience with, but they're pressured into making this decision that's a life-altering one.
Beware whenever the church starts to instruct you about sex. Just turn around, run the other direction, and go find a qualified professional in the field.
The other thing, too, is that the church has a message about sexuality that it sends, which we all know is terribly wrong and so backward and countercultural to what we experience. And that really had a profound impact on me, too, you know, thinking that sex is dirty and it's wrong and it's something that you can't enjoy, which was what it was created to be.
Did you admire your father growing up? You know, did you look at him and you think, yes, you know, he's kind of a hero figure in my life? And then sort of by default, did you find yourself seeking a man in your own life who was like he is?
Yeah, I absolutely did admire my dad, and I still do. He and my mom, as I mentioned, had fought a lot, and I was always much closer to him than I ever was to my mom. I definitely, when I was looking for someone to share my life with, I definitely do keep those qualities in mind because I think that my dad is a very good man. He's very honest. He's generous to a fault. The way that he treats my mom, despite her actions and attitudes towards him, I think are very commendable. I don't think that has anything to do with him being a pastor. I think that that's just because he's a great man.
How's he doing with an atheist daughter, or are you an atheist?
Yes, I am an atheist, and it's been very difficult for him and my mom. I actually left the church in 2014, so it has not been very long. And about a month after I left, I came out to them as an agnostic. And I get a lot of the, oh, you're just wandering, you will come back eventually. I actually was on a career path to become a missionary, and so it was very difficult for my dad to see me fall from this very theocentric personality to a person who's now embracing science and reason and reality instead of biblical doctrine and dogma.
Camille, do many people say it's because you're a PK? Oh, you know what? Preacher's kids either toe the line or they totally rebel, and she's just the rebellious one. Do you catch that?
No. No one's ever said that to me, no.
Any advice you would give for someone who was part of a preacher's family, you know, who was living up to or expected to live up to these unrealistic expectations, who might be having questions or doubt, any advice for them?
I think the one thing that was helpful to me is when you've been involved in a church your entire life, you have a very deep-rooted sense of community. And I think that it's important to find a replacement community after having left this oppressive, abusive environment. I am very fortunate to be a part of a really great local atheist and agnostic group. And actually, the night that I kind of finalized my decision to walk away from God, it was actually Valentine's Day. I'd just broken up with my Christian boyfriend. And I told my parents that I was going on date night with God, which was an event that was being sponsored by the local Christian young adult group. And instead, I went to this atheist group, and I hardly missed a meeting since, and just really plugged in there and invested in the people's lives, and they've really invested in me. And I cannot overstate the importance of that community in replacing my church family for me.
On Valentine's Day, she fell in love with reality.
Yes.
That's beautiful. It's just awesome. Well, and, you know, date night with God just sounds kind of creepy to me.
I was not looking forward to going at all, and so I was very thankful that I wound up an atheist group instead of a date night with God.
You know, I hear he's very forward, and it makes for very uncomfortable moments when you're on a date with God. Camille, you're awesome. Yes. Thanks for sharing your story and your perspective.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad that you've sort of found your own voice. I think that's an amazing thing, you know, when the pressures are so great and yet you still manage to run the gauntlet and come out the other side and have an identity of your own. Good for you. Wonderful stuff.
Thank you so much, Seth. I think you're awesome, too.
I saw an article on a website I'd never seen before called Thought Catalog. It was by a person named Kelsey, and it said, 7 ways every preacher's kid grew up differently. And if you're a PK, you can tell me if this is dead on or totally off base. 1, your life is ruled by pastorly acronyms. And she references PMLS classes, whatever those are, and PPR and some other things. 2, everyone at school expects you to be very well behaved. 3, until you got to high school or college and everyone waits for you to slut up. I got to read part of this paragraph. Hang on. There's really no winning here. In elementary school, the other kids would try to bait you with their extra breadstick on spaghetti day to get you to say damn as a fun preacher kid game. And once high school came, the teachers all winked as you walked by, telling you, we all know how preacher's kids really are. Do you? Because I'm neither reading my Bible by candlelight on Halloween while burning Grand Theft Auto, nor am I having sex with my own twin next-door neighbors simultaneously while screaming Hail Satan. Usually I'm just, you know, watching Netflix and looking up how to make my hair less frizzy. But if you like to think of me doing that while working on my Moses voodoo dolls, so be it. That's funny. 4, you are best friends with every preacher in your state. I guess that's because the pastors are always so networked in, or quite often are so. 5, religion got complicated growing up. 6, you will never be religious enough. And 7, PK perks are real. Enjoy them. Never forget the treats of being the child, grandchild, little sibling of an entire congregation. You'll get birthday cards, Christmas cards, graduation cards, money for all these occasions, gifts, moral support, and friends for an entire lifetime. My mom was a pastor at the same church from the time I was 11 to 22, and during that time, the church helped me to pay for a trip to Uganda, gave me the only surprise birthday party of my entire life, and embraced me despite all of my flaws in number six and beyond. Being a PK is a responsibility and burden, but never forget it's also a gift and a joy denied to many that they couldn't and unfortunately won't understand. Again, that was an article from a website called Thought Catalog, 7 Ways Every Preacher's Kid Grew Up Differently. Mike sent this message and he said, "Thank you for all your work, Seth. I'm relatively new to atheism, and I discovered your show about 2 months ago and have listened to almost the entire back catalog." Thanks, Mike. "My father's a 100% disabled veteran and views his disability as a blessing from God, as he can dedicate 100% of his time to doing God's work. Since his disability when I was very young, he spent most of his time working in either the Assemblies of God's or similarly fundamentalist churches. Without going into too many personal details, my father spent every free dollar our household had on church activities and always led either the kids' church or the youth group at every church we ever attended. My family was never okay with just being a member of the church. We had to put our heart and soul into every church we attended. And most free time when I was young was spent doing things for the church. If you wanted personal time with my father, or hell, even just attention, it had to be in some relation to the church. I should also mention that all my siblings were homeschooled during our younger ages until about grade 6, so we had a lot of time to dedicate to the church. As with any church, when you spend all your time there and invest tons of money there, my parents always got involved in church politics and would end up splintering here or there over some disagreement or another. I spent the majority of my childhood believing I was a true Christian who dedicated all his time to God. I was raised to be racist, homophobic, transphobic, and just about every other phobic there is. After all, anyone who wasn't a Christian family like mine didn't belong in my America. I say this now tongue-in-cheek, but at one point I legitimately believed this. I was homeschooled until grade 6, straight out of the Bible. Literally, we just read the Bible many days. I watched a father who was going more and more insane from legitimately prescribed and needed heavy painkillers as he would drag my family from church to church, all the while being totally different in public than he was at home. My father, growing up, was angry, loud, and swore more than anyone I knew. But on Sunday, he was a suit and tie, praise Jeebus, happy-go-lucky man of God. I often thought while growing up my father was the exception, but the more I saw of churches and pastors, I believe that my father is the rule and not the exception when it comes to pastors. So what's it like being a preacher's kid? It's like living as a child in constant legitimate fear that you'll die or the rapture will happen. And because you didn't pray before you ate lunch that day, that God won't accept you into heaven. It's like going to a new church every few years, knowing in the back of your head you won't be there for long, because it's just a matter of time before your father and the other pastor have a falling out. It's like knowing that the only way you can get attention from your father is if you are interested in something going on at the church. It's like knowing that anything going on in your life isn't as important as, quote, God's work going on in your parents' life. It's like asking for legitimate life advice and being chastised for not following Scripture. It's like knowing that your parents never showed up to a single one of your wrestling matches all 4 years of high school because they're not as important as your brother's choir practice. It's like feeling you're putting your parents under financial stress when you ask for money for food for your away sporting event because they have no money, but they're the first to donate when the church needs a new TV. It's like watching your mother be hospitalized from depression but not seeking real treatment because of religious dogma. It's like knowing to this day that if I call my father, he won't give a shit what's going on in my life, but he won't stop talking about his new Facebook ministry. Deep down, it's like knowing that no matter what you do, you know you can never tell your parents you're an atheist because they'll cut you out of the teeny, tiny portion of their time that they currently give you when not focusing on, quote, God's mission. Deep down, it's like knowing that at the end of the day, your parents care far more about their imaginary friend than they could ever care about you. Atheism, your show, and shows like it have helped me to get rid of many of the negative sides of how I grew up and how I was raised. What you do is vitally important to so many people, especially to people like me. Thank you. And he signs the email, Godless Mike. Mike, thank you so much for sharing such a deeply personal story on the radio. Powerful stuff, man. I had the opportunity to have a conversation tonight with a former pastor and his preacher's kid son. Ken is his name. His son's name is Kenny. And Ken joins me on the radio this evening. Ken, thanks for being here, man. Great to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much, Seth. I was a pastor for about 25 years in a variety of churches. Started out as a charismatic, non-denominational, and ended up as a fundamentalist Baptist. And so I kind of sampled my way through Christianity for about 30-plus years.
So you went from Sunday go-to-meeting, praise Jesus, speaking in tongues, to the Frozen Chosen.
You know, I got saved during the Jesus movement of the early 70s, and watched the movement of the charismatic movement come on scene. And while I was working with a missionary group over in Japan, and so I kind of watched Christianity morph into what it is today through my experiences.
Kenny, talk to me about being raised in a fundamentalist home, and fundamentalist is the word that your father used in the email to me. Pretty strict upbringing?
To be completely honest, I think it's more just being socially restrict, the type of people that you're around. Also, you just kind of live, for me, I felt like I lived, you know, in just kind of the absence of my own father's love and, his attention. And so when you're around other people that, you know, the fundamentalists, I guess you can say, you know, I kind of felt more restricted by them than I did by my own father. And they were just kind of subtle restrictions, things that you just end up kind of falling in line with because it's the right thing to do, apparently. But come to find out, it's all just just kind of a bunch of nonsense.
Did you feel like he had chosen the flock over the family kind of thing? You know, look, you got time for so-and-so. You got time for all these church-related functions. You're visiting hospitals and you're counseling and you're doing all this sermon prep. And what about us? We're just your kids. That kind of thing?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I felt very naive to most of it, to most of, what my father was actually doing. I was really just kind of like, I feel like too busy being a kid.
Well, the reason I brought it up, though, is I think you had sort of alluded to the fact that you felt like he wasn't around much, or did I catch that wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. No, he really wasn't around much. You know, he was doing his pastoral duties, taking care of the flock, as you said. And I think just as a kid, you live in the absence of his actual fatherly duties, taking care of his actual family and not the church family.
Ken, it's difficult for people in sort of service-based professions, church or otherwise, to do a work-family balance. The work-home balance is often really tough, huh?
Yeah, it is. And it's in my pastoral experience, I lived in a parsonage, or we lived in a parsonage for almost all the time.
Okay, now describe parsonage for those who don't know what a parsonage is. Describe the environment for me.
Yeah, so a parsonage is either typically a small cottage-style home on the church property. that is generally in great disrepair. And I know several of them would not even have passed city inspection. But so typically a very small cottage-style home on church property, which meant then that you worked really 24/7. Anybody at any time could come knock on your door and interrupt whatever family thing was going on for the sake of the ministry.
Some religious homes are stricter than others. How strict were you?
That's a good question. I'll let Kenny chime in too once I make my statement. But I tried to be strict, especially when they were younger. I was very concerned that my children were properly educated biblically. That was a very important thing to me. And I know that one of the areas that I really focused on was eschatology, or the study of end times, you know, and those kind of things. It was one of my favorite themes of preaching. But, you know, I was very concerned that my children experienced the faith like I did, like I knew it when I became a Christian when I was 19 years old. And I wanted them to all have that same emotional experience that I had. But as far as the strictness goes, and there's also the corporal punishment up to a certain point. I don't think there's too much difference between me and what an average father would have done as far as corporal punishment. I don't think I ever physically injured my kids that I recall.
No.
Well, we were sort of raised in that the culture where spare the rod, right? I mean, even if it wasn't, you know, you're not taking fists to your kid, but don't make me bend you over my knee, you know, that kind of thing. We caught a lot of that as young children, and I'm sure yours was no different, right?
Right, right. But like I said, my motivation was I was very driven. I wanted my kids very much to have the same religious experience that I did, or something very similar to it.
Do you find yourself overcompensating, like my kids need to be perfect, or they need to be at least really good because everybody in the church congregation is sort of watching? Did you feel a pressure to sort of present pristine family?
Please don't go there. My God. If we had my daughter on the phone right now, she would give you an earful. I tell you what, that pastor's kid comparison stuff was just exhausting to me. And it was exhausting to my wife. And Kenny, I don't know what your thought on that. It was exhausting to me anyway.
No, as a kid, you know, I definitely felt the pressure too. I just didn't know what to do with it. You know, because you definitely, I think you emotionally feel how your parents are feeling. You know, you can sense being tense, and especially when we had to get up on stage and sing a Jesus song in front of the whole church. you feel it in that type of situation.
By the way, son, that's one I haven't apologized for. I apologize for that one.
Well, and I must say that both father and son here are now free thinkers, which we're going to get into that in just a second. But I just, you know, when they look at you, Kenny, you're essentially a reflection of your father. And that's not really a mantle that you asked for, but something probably all children carry to some degree. You know, you are a barometer for the success or failure of your parents. And so you've got to be perfect. Sure. You have to dress a certain way. You have to keep your shoulders squared, even at the darkest of times. Mm-hmm. And you almost feel like you're doing the fake it till you make it thing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was... You know, like I'd mentioned before, the social pressures that come along with being a pastor's kid. And I don't think I felt quite the totality of that responsibility as a pastor's kid, being correct and proper all the time as much as my brother and sisters did. But, you know, I definitely felt the stress on the family that it took. I feel like it was just one of those, it was just like the overall feeling is I think my parents were more stressed about, you know, being right than actually being loving parents, to be honest. It was just a socially responsible thing to do. And when I look back at it, I can't really be mad at them, you know? They were just trying to do what they felt was right for us as kids.
Ken, were you preaching sermons at the point when you started to have doubts, when your journey out of religion started to happen?
Looking back, and I try not to read where I'm at today into the past, because there was a time in my life where I was I truly felt that I was saved. I truly felt that I had a relationship with Jesus Christ, et cetera, et cetera. But I do recall even being, of course, when you're in faith, you're putting on depending on how deeply you go into it, you have to put on blinders. You have to. And there were times I recall preaching my way through texts, and because in fundamentalism, it's all about literalism. It's all about the literal interpretation of Scripture. And going through things, going, geez, it's not quite ringing true. Let's move on. You know, let's keep going until we get past it or find some kind of an apologetic response to what seems to be an obvious contradiction or something of that nature. I actually, the very first bubble that popped in my life was when I was in Bible college. I entered the ministry without a degree and was trying to get my degree while I was pastoring. And I was in a Romans class in college by one of the professors who attended our church. And he was explaining faith. He was in Romans chapter 4. And the deeper he went into it exegetically, into the text, the more it unraveled for me in my mind. And I sat there in Bible class thinking to myself, I don't believe this. But that was my first crisis of faith. And boy, I tell you, Seth, I did everything I could to turn off that voice. But it just kept speaking. I kept hearing myself say that over and over again, and eventually it became brought me to where I am today.
Kenny, which one of you deconverted first, or did it sort of happen simultaneously? I mean, did your dad come to you and say, "All right, son, look, we got to talk," or did you go to dad, or did another scenario take place?
I don't know either. Yeah. Well, I think he did first. I think to be honest, Seth, I don't think my father genuinely believed in being just a fundamentalist, or Baptist, and I don't think he truly believed in it. He might have had an emotional response to it, because that's what religion really thrives on, is, a very charged emotional response. And so I kind of, Dad, we were talking about this earlier. It's just one of those things where I feel like I think my father, he obviously started to deconvert before I did, while I was still trying to believe that all this was real, wanting to believe it because, I grew up in it. But I definitely think my dad did first, and it wasn't until, honestly, about the last 3 years that I've really come around, and I feel like I've had my own personal awakening where I've actually felt, more alive, and like the light bulb went off.
What's that saying that people say, didn't your non-belief turn your life upside down? And I always say, no, it actually turned my life right side up. And that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
How about the rest of the family, if I may ask? I mean, is that still a point of contention?
A little hesitation.
Well, don't let me pry into your, I don't want to peer into your windows, but it was a question that occurred to me, so I was just curious to see if anybody else had sort of joined you in this journey.
I don't think any of my family would mind this conversation. My wife has been reluctant, but we've been married for 36 years, and so we share everything. We share every aspect of our lives virtually, and so she began to consider some of my perspectives. But she has her own. She has her own path, of course, and she has her own freedom of thought and that kind of thing. But she is making her own reconsiderations about faith and that. And I'm being hesitant only because I don't want to speak for her.
Don't let me put words in your mouth, but I think we may agree that her journey is hers to take, right?
Absolutely.
I need you to agree with me so that I can love you. Yeah. It's nothing of the kind. It's you need to know what I'm about. And I think I've got some legitimate concerns here, but ultimately your journey belongs to you. Would that be an accurate way to say it?
Yeah. And that very much describes how we converse about the subject. My oldest daughter, she is pretty much a free thinker, not in the same terminology that we're using. She just lives her life freely and doesn't let these kind of things weigh her down. She's got a lot of Christian friends, and I'm always amazed at her ability to keep those friendships relatively intact. And then I have my oldest son, who's a pastor in a a large church in a nearby city, and a very successful pastor. He does a tremendous job at what he does, and he's got a great heart for people, and he's a tremendous father. He's given us all of our grandkids, and he and his wife are terrific parents, and we've learned a lot of parenting skills from them.
But, I mean, and, they're essentially raising preacher's kids, for better or for worse.
Yes, sir.
If you are a rationalist now and you see that, there has to be a part of you under the surface that thinks, you know, maybe one day my son will come to the point where I came and maybe take a deeper look at some of these things. Do those thoughts ever occur to you?
They do. And I think the similarities between my path and my son's path, there's a lot of similarities there and a lot of similar emotional responses to things. He knows that me and Kenny both have departed from the faith. We haven't discussed it yet. There hasn't been that opportunity. There's been some tension, and we're just now starting to be able to put things back together to the point where we may be able to have some open conversations and hopefully. But Seth, you know, I think there are a lot of times in my past where I was a real religious asshole. I mean, I was very, very rigid. I don't see some of those traits in my son. He's more open in some areas. He's more willing to let people be who they are than I ever was. And I don't know. I'm starting to feel a little bit emotional about it all right now. But
well, Kenny, are you and your dad closer now that you're both non-believers?
Yeah, I think it's a very unique relationship that my father and I have, knowing that, you know, he came to this point, you know, much later in his life, and I'm getting to it much earlier in my life, and I really cherish that. It's just kind of funny that we have both come to that point in our lives where we agree on something that has been a very emotional thing in our family. But, you know, at the same time, I feel like I've always had a very strong relationship with my dad and with my mother as well, regardless of religion or faith of that matter.
I think there's a lesson there, isn't it? I mean, again, agree, disagree doesn't mean we can't love each other.
Yeah, you know, and that is such an important fact, because that's one of those eye-openers for me, was that, you know, you don't have to be necessarily a Christian to be a kind, loving, caring, tender person. You know, like all the same, you know, the attributes that they talk about in the Bible, you don't have to be a Christian to carry those. And that was a big eye-opener for me.
Well, and if you're in the non-believing culture as well, you don't have to see the religious as someone who's automatically motivated by these caricatures of hate. I mean, you'll find hate if you look for it. Mm. But you'll also find many people who are desperate to raise good kids and to live good lives and want to make the world a better place. And they're likely living an inherited belief system, right? Mom and dad, family culture, those types of things. They're just doing the best they can, just like we all are. They're not bad people. Yeah. In many cases, they've just come to a different sort of conclusion on the issue of God and gods and religious belief. We may say, well, you know, the evidence is on our side, but it doesn't make them bad people. And I take some heat. I actually had somebody in, where was I? Seattle. There was a woman in the audience who was unhappy that she felt I was too soft on the religious. And I think we can be strong about ideas, but we can also show compassion toward people. I don't think those two contradict each other at all.
Yeah. Hey, Seth, I want to make a quick comment. Just, you know, my biggest regret about my parenting approach was the installation of fear in my children. I greatly regret that.
Fear of what? Fear of you, or fear of hell, or what?
Fear of hell, apocalyptic thinking, fear of God, just fear in general, fear of the world, fear of knowing yourself, fear of being comfortable in your own skin because you're a bad person. Look, you were born in sin. You sin by choice. God declares you a sinner. You're a bad person, and you need to get right. Those kind of fears, the fears of apocalypse, fears of political meltdown in the country, fear of Kenny and I, we know, remember a story when my kids were in a Christian school back in Long Beach when they were in elementary school, and they were out on the basketball court. Kenny, do you remember the story? Playing basketball, and one of the teachers, the kids were having a good time, and one of the teachers came up, and I forgot whether he told Aaron or you, you know, you shouldn't love basketball so much because it's of the world, and you know, you're going to go to hell if you love basketball more than you love Jesus, or some god-awful thing like that. Do you remember something like that, Kenny?
Yeah, I think that was directed at Aaron, but I was there.
All right, so come on, you go back in time, Ken, and you see your son, and you see any of your children. How would you rephrase that? What would you say to them at the age of 5, 10, 12, 15, 18 years old?
I would say to them, believe in yourself. I believe in you. Believe in yourself. Believe that you can do what you set your mind to do. Know that there's a whole world out there waiting to be explored, and there's wonderful people of all kinds of variation that you can just get to know. And, you know, I would tell them the world is not a frightening place. Oh, sure, there's scary things about the world, but there's so much in the world to be enjoyed. And but basically, I would go back, Seth, and I would tell all my kids, believe in yourself. You are a wonderful person. And to this day, I'm amazed at my children. I was going to say thank God.
I do the same thing. I do the same thing. Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever you want to say. I'm so grateful that my children are who they are and have turned out to be amazing people who I look at with nothing but respect. And so, yes, I would go back and tell my children, I believe in you. Your mother believes in you. We believe you're awesome people, and we want you to believe in yourself. And I want you to get an education. I want you to learn. I want you to open up your mind and explore life.
Ken, you seem like a good man. Sounds like you got a beautiful family, so you did good.
No, I did.
Thank you both for sharing your perspectives on the radio. I think it's been enlightening and encouraging for a whole lot of people out there. It means a lot.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Seth.
Thank you for your time, Seth. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for listening to the broadcast tonight. I'm on my way to California doing Sacramento, San Jose, San Luis Obispo, Riverside, San Diego. You can find those events online at thethinkingatheist.com/events. But our broadcast with Shelley Siegel will air at the normal broadcast time on Tuesday evening, 6 p.m. Central next week, and it's going to be an awesome, awesome show. Huge thanks to our sponsor. You can still get your free snacks and that free trial at Nature Box. Over 100 different snacks to choose from, and a delicious way to support this broadcast. Just go to naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. And thanks for listening.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.